Welcome. We're here today with Safe House Project co-founder Brittany Dunn and VaporStream CEO Galina Zaskowski. Safe House Project serves and empowers survivors of child sex trafficking in America. VaporStream is a privacy-focused communication technology company that partners with Safe House Project in its mission. We're here today to talk about building trust in technology. Building trust in communications and technology.
Thank you so much for that introduction, Miriam. And Brittany, we're so happy to do this today. And if you don't mind, I'll ask you a few questions and we could have a bit of a dialogue. But could you please tell us a little bit about the Safe House Project and how VaporStream plays a role in your mission?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me here today. So Safe House Project, we really began in response to the hundreds of thousands of Americans who are trafficked every year here in the United States. From that, we really believe that we want to see all of our survivors afforded an opportunity to rebuild their path, rebuild their future, and recover from the past traumas that they've endured. So Safe House Project, our vision is to see communities across America unite to end domestic sex trafficking and restore hope and freedom and a future to every survivor while building a better future through preventing the spread of child sex trafficking. So we have been greatly appreciative of our partnership with VaporStream because a huge part of what makes it, or what helps us be successful, is having secure communication. We deal with people from all different types of industry. We deal with survivors, we deal with our Safe House programs, and we need to have the ability really to communicate in a secure way and ensure that everybody feels safe while we work to fulfill our mission.
Thank you so much for that introduction, and for the introduction of the Safe House. You know how we feel and how important we think your work is. And we had an event that we were at together. We were very fortunate to be sponsoring an event for Safe House. And when we spoke last month, we talked a little bit about the importance of communications and communication safety, and how, in addition to making survivors feel physically safe, it's also important to make them feel safe in the communication and communicating again, because as I recall you saying, one of the difficulties that survivors face is being able to communicate. Can you elaborate a little bit about that? Can you tell us more about what communication safety actually means to your to you and to your group and to the survivors, and what it really entails?
Yeah, of course. So I always like to tell people, like, you think about your diary when you were growing up. Like, that was your, you know, secret thoughts, the things that you didn't necessarily want the entire world to know. And trauma can be like that for our survivors. It is really hard for them to process that they have endured in their life. And it can be a challenge sometimes to communicate and not know that what you're sharing with the isn't being shared with other people. So often I hear from the survivors that we get to work with that they want the ability to share about what's happened to them and not have to fear that that's going to be used, not always against them, but just even redistributed to people that they didn't intend to hear their story. And so it really creates a deeper level of connection when they feel like they can share with you in confidence and know that they have that opportunity to have a safe place. For many survivors, that were not trafficked, so maybe let me back up. A lot of the survivors that we work with were trafficked by family members. But then once you go outside of the 40% that are trafficked by a family member, most of these kids are meeting their first trafficker online. And so they're developing those relationships over messengers that aren't secure. And so once that trafficking situation, they're hesitant to communicate via some of your more traditional ways. And so what VaporStream does is it allows us to give them a tool where we can tell them that nobody can screenshot what you're saying. No one can use it against you. You have the power at your tips to vaporize messages that you don't want other people to still have access to. And so it really, it's liberating and freeing for them to know that not only are they safe in one of our safe houses, but that they also can communicate in a secure manner.
Yeah, it certainly is very important. You know, I didn't even realize the fact that since they meet a lot of times they're traffickers and they're abusers online, that that would make them extra sensitive. That's a really interesting point. And I'm certainly very proud and pleased that VaporStream is helping them feel safer and that you're using it in a way that helps you give them trust in their communication. So that's great. Has it been working well, in your opinion, to build that trust?
Oh, absolutely. No, it's been incredible. And I think that anything that we can do to return agency to survivors of human trafficking is critical. And that's really what this does. It makes them feel empowered. And they, with the password protection, they know that people aren't getting in there to see their messages. So, you know, it's just, it's another layer of them feeling like they're taking back control, something that was taken from them.
Wow. Was there anything in particular, a particular moment in time or a particular incident that made you realize that communication safety was so critical? Because it's not necessarily the most obvious thought, but it's, I mean, it's obvious once you say it, but I'm wondering if there was something specific that made you realize that.
I think there's one of those things where there's a lot of compounding incidences that make you realize it. Thankfully, we didn't have, you know, like some really horrific experience where everybody's safety was put in jeopardy. But it was more those great conversations that we had with various people around the importance of online safety, or then going a step further into secure communications. And, you know, when we're dealing with people who are in this industry, they're coming from all over and they all have their own expertise and they all have their own reason to be in this. And just being able to ensure that people's information is kept in a secure format, and being able to reassure them that, you know, their personal identifiable information isn't getting out there is huge. And so VaporStream was just one more level of security that we could offer all of our partners to really ensure that everybody, whether it's, you know, our Safe House partners, our survivors, us, or those other affiliates that we work with, that they have that opportunity to communicate with us in a way that they really feel comfortable and safe.
Wow, yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about all the partners and all the different people it takes to create this community. So that's a great point. Could you talk a little bit about the steps that it takes to build this digital trust with your survivors? Because I'm sure it's a multi-step approach to get them to the point of comfort. How do you go about it, and what are the steps that you take?
Yeah, I mean, it can look a little bit different depending on where the survivor's coming from and what their specific past entailed. But I think at its basis, we just try to, you know, help them understand that when we are communicating with them, we want to do it in the most secure way possible to not only protect us, but also protect them. And that's the more important part for us, is we want them to feel safe. And so we have great dialogue initially around the importance of safety, them helping them understand that, you know, they can sometimes end up having to relive their trauma because of what has been distributed through technology. And so when you have an individual who can be consistently re-traumatized by the presence of, you know, content on the web, or communication that they had, or pornography, or any of the things that happened during their trafficking situation, that makes technology feel more like an evil. But the reality is that technology is just a tool that can be used for good, or can be used for good or evil. And so it's reshaping it in their mind to show them how we can use different technologies to keep them safe, to have secure communication. And then that allows them over time to build up the trust. And so what we usually find is that, you know, it starts off with small conversations that they're telling us simple things, you know, or asking us simple questions. And then as time goes on, we're building those deep trust bonds where they're sharing more and more about their past, or they're asking us questions, you know, when they can't sleep at 2 a.m. and they know that we are able to respond and offer them, you know, real-time responses to triggers or help them get support that they need in those moments.
Wow. It is really incredible. What you do always amazes me. I always learn something new every time I hear you speak, and it's amazing. I wonder if you could extrapolate from the things that you learned, particularly with a group that's very sensitive like this, and certainly it takes time to build trust. What do you think the general public, the rest of us, could learn to benefit from your experiences in terms of building better trust in communications? Like, what would you say are the top three tips and tricks for building trust that you could give to anybody, you know, who is not necessarily in this kind of situation, but just from your experiences, what would you think those would be?
Yeah, I think that we are in a state where there is information overload. And often that means that things can be taken out of context, or people are afraid to say something because of how easy it is to distribute, you know, or to record something and have it distributed. And so I think that the first thing is, you know, this allows for people to have those deeper conversations and those more meaningful conversations in a secure way where they don't have to necessarily build up walls. And I think this really allows them to, you know, for walls to be broken down and for there to be an honest dialogue without the fear that something that they said could be taken out of context or misconstrued. And I think that's really important in this day and age. I think we need to have the freedom to have great conversations that drive innovation, that drive people to feeling empowered. And part of that is being able to kind of hash it out, so to speak. I think the other part of building trust is, you know, it takes time, and sometimes it's also using all of the tools at hand to build that trust. So, you know, there's a lot, we're sitting here social distancing, for instance. And so usually the things that would allow us to build trust are going to be those in-person interactions, but we have had that removed from us in the current climate. And so now this is a time where so much interaction is happening in the digital space, and people need to be feel free to voice their concerns, their fears, and everything like that, but in a secure way. I think the final thing around this is really just around personal safety and making sure that you feel like that if you have private information, that you don't have to worry about that getting spread and jeopardizing your future career or your chances of getting into college or anything like that. We live in an age where information is at our fingertips and people can either use that for good or for evil. And so this is just one more layer of protection around us and our families and our communities to keep everyone safe.
So these are great insights. And I think you partially started to answer my next question, and that is, where do you see safety communications going in the future? Do you think people are more aware of it in general? Do you think that there are some trends, or are there some trends that you would like to see, just so that, or awareness that you would like to see, just so that we could have all the benefits of technology, but maybe remove at least some of the downsides?
Yeah. I think that, you know, security is you know, paramount. I think everybody feels that, whether you're in cybersecurity or, you know, my husband's military. And so everything is always about security in my household. How do we keep our kids safe online? How do we keep our kids, you know, our family safe from financial threats, or all of these different layers of security? I feel like in today's day and age, that's all we're talking about. So just from a practical application standpoint, the fact that I can tell my husband a password to an account when, you know, he's halfway around the world and not worry about somebody intercepting personal information, that's huge. That's really important for our military community, because deployment doesn't mean that you get to always have the ability to share that information securely. And so rather than passing it through traditional forms, you can use something like VaporStream to securely pass that information and still protect your family. So I think there's a lot of opportunity. as we continue to see our world evolve and see the response to threats against our security. And I'm excited to see the innovation that is spurred as a result of just our current climate.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for that. I love your example because you're absolutely right, especially in military situations, like you said, with your husband being maybe deployed halfway around the world and needing to share something very private and confidential. And I think looking closer to home with today's crisis, we see that quite a bit with healthcare professionals who might be isolated or quarantined or stuck in at work and just not having necessarily easy access to communicate with their families or their patients. So maybe this crisis, you're right, will highlight that a little bit to the rest of the world, if you will, that is maybe not had to deal with it the way you've had to deal with it.
Absolutely. This reminds me as well, even if, you know, I've seen a lot of family recently going through the challenge of, you know, an older, a grandparent passing or a family member passing and needing to transfer information around passwords and security or, you know, username passwords around their accounts. And talk about such a secure way to do that if you don't live in the same city. You never want to pass that over traditional forms of email or something like that. This is a great way to know that that information would not be seen by anybody in the interim.
Absolutely. And certainly if you do pass it around in traditional ways, you know, it could become a hacker's paradise. And that's what we really want to avoid, which actually brings me to my next question. Just listening to you and hearing a lot about what's going on with Safe House and social distancing, et cetera, I would imagine that this time more than ever, we really need to think about what the less fortunate than us maybe are going through and how difficult it is for you to keep your mission going, because you can't be there in the ways that you would have normally been in terms of being there in person, having that interaction. I'm sure I would love for you to talk a little bit more about the difficulties that you currently encounter, because what I would love to encourage our readers and listeners to do is to think about, especially in these difficult times, helping out those who really need the help right now and who are very vulnerable. So if you don't mind just telling us a little bit more about, not that your work isn't challenging enough at normal times, but a little bit more about the challenges you encounter and how our listeners perhaps could assist at this difficult time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. So, you know, this is a hard issue on any given day, but you add the layers of complexity around coronavirus to the current situation, and you take a very vulnerable group of individuals who have always been vulnerable, and you just layer on more fear and uncertainty, which creates just more challenges. So just to back up slightly, we have on average, you know, we have hundreds of thousands of children in the United States that are trafficked every year. But victim identification has always been around 1%. And so Safe House Project, we exist to accelerate Safe House capacity by launching new Safe Houses that will serve these children in a residential program for usually on average 12 months. And that's with all of the necessary wraparound services. That's going to have a house guardian. It's going to have therapists on site. It's going to have educators. And it's helping them putting them back on the road to recovery and really empowering them for a lifetime of freedom. So in the current climate, we have a challenge because we have, you know, members of our teams and our support teams who can't get to the safe houses for one reason or another. They might have their own children to take care of during this time, or there are shelter in place laws that are happening. And so all of these add just added cost as we work to create more ways to serve those who are in care. We are also seeing a rise in the number of survivors that are needing help. As these times are hitting, they, maybe some of their traditional support systems are failing. And so when they don't have access to your basic needs, they're looking to our partners and us throughout the United States to meet just the basic necessities of housing and food and shelter. I think the final point is really that, you know, there are children that for them, school is their safe haven. It's the place that they get to go every day and escape the pain and the trauma that they're experiencing at home. And now they're trapped in a house where they don't feel safe. And so at the end of this, we expect to see a substantial rise in the number of cases and the need to support these survivors of sex trafficking in America. Already, we're seeing an increase of child pornography and distribution online. We are seeing an increase in the number of suicide attempts. And all of this just creates more layers of need and support that we have to offer to these vulnerable populations. And so our work has always been needed. It's always been relevant. But I think it's just highlighted in these times of national or global crisis. And so we greatly appreciate anyone who can and will come alongside us to help meet the needs of the most vulnerable population in our society and ensure that at the other end of this, they are here to celebrate all of us getting to come out of isolation and reenter society together.
So, Brittany, I am very touched by what you just said, and I really encourage everybody to do what they can to help out with Project Safe House. I am very proud that we are able to help in some small way. And I would love to sort of put a call to action out. And we hope that you will save many, many lives. And, you know, just as coronavirus, this is a deadly disease that goes unnoticed in our society. And hopefully, with your efforts and everybody's efforts, this too could be eradicated. And thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you for your time today. We appreciate your support.